sang out a song of the soul.
And we'll sing this song. Why don't you sing along? And we can sing.
Music has an incredible ability to proclaim the soul's language beyond what mere words can speak. That is what we seek as we invite our guests to share their song of the soul. Be it joy and laughter, sorrow and tears, awe and insight, or deepest devotion, as we visit and listen, we are all part of a spiritual voyage called Song of the Soul. Arielle Silver is on a mission, and she takes this pursuit seriously. We'll get to know her music today, but her deep encounter with Eastern spirituality, including her practice of yoga, meditation, and more, could easily fill all of our broadcast time. Arielle had music flowing into her from her father's playing music, and it was also a rich part of her Jewish background, but she definitely found the need for her music to rise out of and be rooted in her spirituality. Arielle made 3 albums, but then took a 10-year detour, eventually leading her back to the work of a songwriter, with 2 new albums and another in gestation. She can do it all musically, but today you'll hear mainly her folkish influences rather than pop, rock, jazz, or punk. Whatever she sings, she shapes into an elevating, moving, spellbinding flow of music. Because she shares with us so deeply, you can count on today being part 1 of her Song of the Soul, with part 2 next week. A great big thanks to Andrew Jansen for production assistance on today's program. Arielle Silver joins us from the West Coast via Zoom. Arielle, I'm so very happy to have you here today for Song of the Soul.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. I'm excited to be here.
You're somewhere close to L.A. Are you actually in L.A. or one of the suburbs or surrounding areas?
I think it was Dorothy Parker that said that Los Angeles is 72 villages trying to be a city. I am in one of those 72 places. Actually, I think she used the word suburbs, not villages. That would make more sense. But yeah, I'm in Los Angeles County. I am in the city of Los Angeles, technically, but it is a mountain range and a number of highways away from downtown Los Angeles.
Does that mean when things like there's major upheaval sometimes, you know, near me here, I'm in Wisconsin, just across the border from Minnesota, when George Floyd happened, it's not exactly we could see the smoke rising, but it was so close for that, right? Does that come close to you, or are you insulated a bit by that from the suburb you live in?
I think that in terms of social activism and political activism, it happens all over the city. And it seems like all of these 72 suburbs, or however many there are, there's community connection within each of these areas. I live on the border of North Hollywood and Burbank. Burbank is technically not the city of Los Angeles, it's the county of Los Angeles. And North Hollywood is technically the city of Los Angeles and the county of Los Angeles. I'm sort of on the border of the two. But if I wanted to go to a political or social activism event, I would probably go to Burbank or North Hollywood, or then even North Hollywood, you could divide up into Studio City, Sherman Oaks, Van Nuys. I'm an East Coaster and I moved here 20 years ago, and it took me probably the first 10 or so years to quite understand it. You know, what is that layout? Why is it like that? And when I learned that it came down to water rights, it all made more sense. It has to do with who owns the water and who gets access to the water. And so many of the areas that are on the other side of the Hollywood Hills, the mountain range, basically, many of them were formerly their own municipality. And then over time, they needed water. They negotiated taxes and water rights and things like that. And so it became part of the city.
I actually spent some time in Burbank, not just a day or two, because it was for computer work that I was doing ages ago. So I started to feel out the area.
Yeah, I mean, but if there's some music happening, I mean, like, you know, we easily move across the city. You know, if you're willing to be in the traffic, it's a very populous area. I think, yeah, in terms of, like, you know, George Floyd protests or Black Lives Matter or any of the other types of marches and protests that have been happening in recent years, for sure, downtown Los Angeles, you know, it's streets on a grid. And, that's really a center of a lot of that activism, but it happens all over the city.
I was also wondering about things like the fires that were happening near there, and also the ICE agents who were infiltrating. Of course, everybody heard about what happened right around the Twin Cities, Minneapolis here. I heard about it happening near LA too.
Yeah, there's been a lot of ICE activity in Los Angeles County and Los Angeles City and all over, like all different neighborhoods across the city. So, not just when people talk about Los Angeles, they rarely are talking only about downtown. I think that the equivalent might be sort of if you say that you're from New York City, you might live in Queens, you might live in Manhattan. You might live in one of the boroughs and you could drill down into the towns. You could say, I live in, Far Rockaway, Queens, New York, but it's like, where do you live? New York City, that kind of thing. I think it's sort of similar. So yeah, there's been ICE activity all over and the fires. So you're talking about the fires of 2025 that really were incredibly destructive. So where I live in that area, North Hollywood Burbank border, it's the valley, it's the San Fernando Valley, and the Altadena fire was over the mountain range to the east, and the Palisades fire, it was a bit further away, but if it had crested the mountain range, so they had evacuated Topanga, if the fires actually had crested that hill, I was almost equidistant right in the middle of those two. So either one, just a few miles away. We didn't have mandatory evacuation where I am, but we had evacuation warnings. So we had our bags packed to go. There's sort of different levels of. Well, welcome to Southern California. Welcome to, we have a lot of beautiful things here too. We have the jacarandas are in bloom right now, which is the equivalent of the cherry blossoms for here. Everything's purple and beautiful. So.
And purple's my favorite color, so let's go for it. One of the things you didn't mention was much of your, I guess, musical transition. I understand that when you were in Boston area, you're going to school, that woodwinds was what you were after. But that's not what you are. So what happened? Transmutation? Was this a special Massachusetts sauce? How did you become?
The Massachusetts sauce. Massachusetts is an amazing place for all kinds of music and all kinds of music that I really love. I mean, I can't think of many kinds of music that I don't love, but my dad, before I was born, into my, baby years, into my toddler and all my single digits, my dad, like I said, he was young, he was establishing his career, and he had many evenings his acoustic guitar that he had bought when he was in college on a road trip to Mexico. And we would sit around, he'd pull out his songbooks and he'd play Leaving on a Jet Plane and Puff the Magic Dragon, and he'd sing Phil Oakes and Joan Baez and Joni Mitchell and Elton John and all these storytelling songwriters. And my dad would play these songs, and I got to know those songs before I ever heard the recorded versions of them. Some, he'd play 8 tracks or cassettes or something in the car, and we had records on the stereo. But for the most part, I knew those songs from him. So that was my first music. And also, I was raised from the time of nothing and going to temple, going to synagogue. And so I had all of the Jewish prayers and all of the kind of Hebrew, folk songs, I guess, in my head. And so those were the first bits of music that I ever knew. I really loved the piano. My great grandmother, she didn't play, but we did have somebody in my father's lineage, my ancestry was actually a concert pianist, but I don't remember who that was. But the piano, one of the pianos, was in my great grandmother's house. And when we would visit her, I was just really enamored with this instrument. I did not understand the guitar that my dad played. Like, I didn't understand the shapes that he was making with his fingers on the fretboard and, all that stuff. But when I sat down at the piano at this very young age, I could just sit down and immediately start plunking out single note tunes or putting my fingers down on the keys and making clusters of sound. I loved the piano. My folks couldn't afford a piano, but my school in third grade was offering violin lessons. And in order to take violin, you had to leave reading class once a week and go to the violin class. And I did not like the sound of the violins. And anybody, a room full of beginning violin students isn't pleasant, I think, to anybody. But also, I had to leave my reading class, which was my favorite class, in order to go to this violin class. So I stopped going to violin And the next year, the school offered woodwinds or wind, the band instruments, the winds and the percussion. And my babysitter played clarinet. And so I said to my mom, I'd like to play clarinet. My babysitter plays it. And my mom said, "Well, I know you're holding out for piano. And if you quit the clarinet, we will never get a piano. We'll never let you play the piano." And so I thought she meant forever. As it turns out, she just meant for the year. Like, don't drop out of clarinet the way you dropped out of violin last year. I thought she meant forever. So, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, I'm taking private lessons with my babysitter. I'm better than all my other, classmates. Eventually, I start taking clarinet lessons with my babysitter's clarinet teacher, and I excel. And my band teachers start sending me off to auditions for all-state band and, all of these kinds of things. And I'm good. I'm the, best clarinetist in school, and I'm still holding out for piano. That's the only reason I was still playing clarinet at that point, was that I really wanted to play the piano. And I was playing the long game, and I kept thinking, one of these days we're going to get it. So my parents eventually, I think it was free. They found a free piano. They just had to pay for the delivery service to bring it to our house. And I can't remember how old I was, eighth grade, maybe ninth grade, maybe, but we finally got a piano. We got a piano teacher. The only problem was that by then I was playing clarinet at a pretty high level. I was playing saxophone in the jazz band. I had started playing oboe, and I was taking oboe lessons as well. And I didn't have any time to also practice piano. And so I learned a little piano, but there just wasn't time between all that and all the rehearsals and these bands and orchestras, that by then every single day of the week was either after school, it was either Hebrew school or private music lesson or a rehearsal of some kind. So that was that. I got to college, and we had a wonderful early music program in the school that I went to, and I played clarinet in the orchestra. I played in the woodwind quartet and quintets, lots of chamber music groups and things like that. And sometime in college, I bought my first acoustic guitar, a $75 acoustic guitar off of a friend. And I right away started writing songs. I never really learned to play other people's songs. When I found myself with the guitar in hand, what happened was that when I didn't have a woodwind instrument in my mouth was available to sing. And the difference between the guitar and those instruments also is that on the guitar, like the piano, you can play chords, you can play harmony, you can do multiple things at the same time that you can't do when you're playing a linear instrument like a clarinet. One note at a time, you can play arpeggios, but you can't play chords, you can't sing at the same time. And so as soon as I had the guitar, I started writing songs. I had been keeping journals my whole life. I was a writer, essentially. And that was how that started. And so then I started busking in Harvard Square and in the subways in Boston, and eventually went back to school. I went another round of school to Berklee College of Music, which I got into on a clarinet scholarship, but I went there to study songwriting. So that was sort of the pivot time.
Wow, that's a long journey we've been on there. One item that I need from you is, what was the name of your band when you were traveling with drummer and all?
It was just the Ariel Silver Band.
Well, that's convenient.
Because I played some shows with the band, and I also still performed solo. I've always performed solo also. So when I made my second album, I put it out. I wanted to indicate that this was a band. So my second album is under the Ariel Silver Band. And then my third album was just back to my name, Ariel Silver, but it was the same band.
Well, let's get started with your Song of the Soul. We've got so much more territory to cover. I'm pretty sure that folks who are listening, if they're listening via the 38 or so stations that broadcast us nationwide, that they will need to go online to hear the uncut version with the full story of your life. There's a lot here, folks, and Ariel Silver has so many gifts to bring us. We won't fit them into 55 minutes, but we'll do whatever we need to in our podcast. So, what's your first song, Ariel?
You mentioned George Floyd earlier, and so I started thinking of this one song, but then there's this other song about that period of time when I was burned out and kind of lost my way away from music. I stepped away from music for 10 years. I'll tell you the names of both of them. They're both on your list, and you get to pick which one we're going to listen to first. I'll say that Soft on the Shoulder was initially inspired by the George Floyd protests and the Black Lives Matter movement. That was the inspiration for Soft on the Shoulder. And then The Calling was a song that I wrote really about that loss of faith and just, feeling like this music thing that had called me so strongly for my whole life, it was no longer calling me. And so that's what The Calling is really about.
I think we're going to listen to Soft on the Shoulder first and then talk a little bit more and then go to The Calling. I think that's what I'd like to do, Arielle, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's usually very important to me that you make the calls, but I'm willing to go with this since you've already introduced it in this way. Soft on the Shoulder is from Watershed, which came out when?
Came out in 2023. It's the first song on the album.
2023 and the Black Lives Matter to 2020 and on.
Yeah, I wrote all the songs on that album in 2021. And so it just, the recording process and the release process, the album came out in 2023.
There's a phrase in here, it's soft on the shoulder. It says, soft on the shoulder watching the parade. I don't know what soft on the shoulder watching the parade means. And that's just because I'm from Wisconsin and we don't know those fancy East or West Coast things. I don't know. What does that mean?
Soft on the shoulder to me meant standing on the shoulder of the road and just being an onlooker, a bystander, not a participant in what was happening, and to view it as entertainment, looking at it as a parade rather than looking at it as a march, and rather than joining in with the activism, standing soft on the shoulder. That's what I
Okay,
meant.
that's what that makes sense to me now.
Yeah, it's not a phrase that I've heard someone else use, so.
Well, let's all quote Arielle Silver, soft on the shoulder. It should become a phrase in our language now. It makes perfect sense. It's a very evocative image. I want to say before we play even this first song, of course, your singing is beautiful, your playing's beautiful. The instruments around you, I understand there's like five other people in the band playing, making music. I see some piano going wild in some songs. It's just great stuff. And of course, your singing and your lyrics are right at the very center. And so I would like you folks to just sit down, let it wash over you as Arielle Silver shares Soft on the Shoulder.
It starts with a witness, kindness, a vision, a handheld, an arm linked in mine, carving out some time to understand my crime. I try not to fear thoughts, change thought for old flaws my heart might not want to feel, but we can never heal what we keep concealed. You gold, but I swear it on my soul. I'll keep trying. Were you asking me to listen? Was I talking through your turn? Was I offering kisses and band-aids, insufficient to the burn? Were you
Ariel Silver's website is arielsilver.com. The link, of course, is on northernspiritradio.org, so you can always come and find that for all of my guests on my site. And that was her song, Soft on the Shoulder, from her album Watershed. The soft on the shoulder thing, already in our talking before we were on the air and everything that I've heard from you, leads me to think that you are passionate about causes, passionate about healing in the world, passionate about being connected with that work. Are you an activist?
I would say I do consider myself an art activist, but I think that activism looks different in different people. I sat on a panel at a conference, a music conference back in the fall, and it was an art activism panel. And I really loved how the moderator, Liz Stuckey-Sund, she's the founder, along with her father, Noel Paul Stuckey from Peter, Paul, and Mary, of a wonderful organization called Music to Life. And it's a way of connecting community and activism of some kind and music. And so all the people that are involved in the organization are working at that intersection. I was sitting on the panel and she talked about how some people are the disruptors and some people are the educators and some people are the healers. And I really loved that she kind of parsed it out that way, because activism doesn't have to look the same in everybody. And when I was younger, I went to, you know, I made signs and I went out to a lot of demonstrations or protests or causes that were important to me. I loved that energy when I was younger. I really gravitated toward it. I wanted to shout at the top of my lungs and join my voice in that way. My throat would be raw from a day out there, you know, and that was what my activism looked like back then. I think it's quieter now. I channel it more into one-on-one conversations, or, you know, and I think maybe living out here in California has done this for me, because as much as, you know, people look at the state of California when you're divvying up states into red and blue, and you see blue here and red over there, you know, like most other places, there's a blend of perspectives and a blend of leanings. And as I've gotten back out into performing, I've performed in red areas and blue areas. And I've really started to think that I love that music is the connector, that it brings people who are so diametrically opposed to each other, so politically opposed. I love that they can sit together in a musical setting and drink wine together and sing along at the chorus and laugh at the stories or cry. You know, I've just, from my side of the stage, have started to really appreciate these points, especially, you know, at this moment in history, this era that we're in, where people are just so disconnected from each other. I love that that music is the place where they can sit together and be human together. And so the way that, as I've been thinking about that, the way that my art activism looks now is, can I go to places across different territories and drill down into the really human experiences, stories, very specific stories? And can I pepper those stories with perspectives? Can I talk about soft on the shoulder? What inspired that? And that idea of standing soft on the shoulder rather than participating, and, you know, how we opt in or opt out of different kinds of conversations. Can I go into places like this and have conversations, introduce a song like that, and allow the audience to feel what they're feeling and hopefully to move them in some way so that they join my mailing list, so that then I can start this is my thing. So I'm a writer, right? So can I transform this moment where they're sitting with a glass of wine and they're side by side with people who maybe don't vote the same way they vote? And can they both like my songs? Both of these people who are different from each other, can they both like my songs? Can they both join my mailing list? Can I email them both in a week and say, hey, I'm really loving this book and this song and this playlist and this idea and this philosophy. And can I just present some new ideas possibly to folks? And some of them will be like, yeah, we're totally aligned. I love what you're doing. And other people will be like, wow, I never thought about that before. And I do it in a non-pedantic way. That to me is what art activism is looking like a lot for me. How can I build a bridge through music and create a safe space where people can feel welcome? And through music and stories that I present, can they start to consider perspectives that perhaps they haven't considered before? That's a big part of it. The other part of it is that I love one-on-one conversations. I teach yoga. I teach creative writing. I do workshops. And so in those places, can I facilitate a deeper level of conversation? Like, can we look at what is the root causes of suffering as discussed in the Yoga Sutras, the underlying philosophy of the practice? Can we have a conversation about the root causes of suffering and how that looks in our own lives and in the world around us right now? Can we have these deeper conversations? And not just that, but how can we then be a source of healing for ourselves through the practices of art and storytelling and music and yoga? Can we heal ourselves? Can we be a source of peace in our household so that whoever we live with goes out and smiles at their neighbor rather than lashes out at the neighbor? You know, it's like, how can we do this in a trickle-out effect? It's less dramatic than, you know, going to a march and holding a sign and shouting at the top of my lungs, but I don't know which one is more effective, but this is the one that I've been doing now.
Well, there have been studies of which is more effective. And I think yelling on the corner is usually not overall more effective. It may be at a certain moment do what needs to be done.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that is valuable too, because we all need to find the people that we agree with. Like, we need to feel energized. And so those people that are the disruptors or who are the shouters, thank goodness for them, because it's like, if I'm driving through territory where I don't feel like I might be very welcome, and then I see someone with a sign, then I'm like, oh, thank goodness you have that sign up. It makes me feel better. Like, oh, you're my people. You know, we all need that feeling too.
I do both, and so I'm very happy to support and energize those who are doing whatever good they can for this world. Before we go on to the next song, I want to mention that this is Song of the Soul, which is a Northern Spirit Radio production. Our guest today is Ariel Silver, website arielsilver.com. You can find the link to her, in case you don't know how to spell Ariel, for example, on NordenspiritRadio.org. You'll find her there. And all my guests of the past almost 21 years now that we've been doing both the Song of the Soul and Spirit in Action. All those guests include, for instance, Ariel mentioned that she was working with a daughter of Noel Paul Stuckey. Noel is his name, but for the band reasons, they made it Peter, Paul, and Mary to get the right letters. I interviewed him a year or two ago, and you'll find that on my site. All of these programs, the wealth of music and activism that I've had the privilege to bring to people is all on there. And so look that up. You look up where the stations where we're broadcast, some 38 of them across the nation. You know, of course, you can also just listen via podcast. Podcasts can be longer than the 55-minute broadcast we have. So if we had too much to share, remember to go to the podcast and you'll capture that. On our site, you'll find the links to those community radio stations. If there's one in your town that's not carrying my program, let them know they can. They can do it for free. It's not a problem. And the importance of this work for me is to reach more people. And the purpose that we have for Northern Spirit Radio is that we promote world healing by broadcasting inspirational and educational voices of peace and social justice using the language of personal story, music, and spirituality. So if you can connect us up with more of the world, it's a greater blessing to all of us, I hope. in order to do that, of course, we need financing, as do those community radio stations. We've made the decision for Northern Spirit Radio to not take money from corporations. And that has something to do with every time you accept a gift of that sort, there's usually some strings attached, and we don't want to have those strings. We want to serve the greatest good we can of you, the listener. So please do support us. Again, NordenspiritRadio.org. You find out where. Please post comments. Let us know what you're listening to, where we should be listening, where we have to go with this work. And right now, our work is calling us back to some more music from Ariel Silver. What should we share next?
Let's do The Calling.
You already explained a bit about this. Refresh people's memory. The Calling is really about the time when you had your major burnout after touring. And I completely understand, by the way, about the burnout. I'm amazed that the people can do it year after year. My experience, what I've done, a very small scale, a week or two long folk dance tours that I was doing. And after 2 days, I don't remember where I was yesterday or where I'm next day. I can be, okay, I'm here for the moment. And that's very disorienting. And I think it steals some vital spiritual energy when you're unrooted like that. But this is about it. Talk about The Calling. It wasn't your calling. Many people are called, but not you. Is that?
The Calling is, I was thinking about when I was on tour driving across Texas. And you could see forever across the plains and the grasslands, tumbleweeds, and you could see the long, long, I don't know how long, so long, freight trains. They would go on forever. I found myself wondering, you know, where are they going? You know, that there's something so lonesome feeling about those freight trains just going across the plains. Well, a number of years later, I was living here in Los Angeles. I was starting to write songs again. I was starting to emerge carefully out of this burnout phase. And I was feeling so tender about every song. I didn't want to make a sudden move. I didn't want to scare the song away. You know, I was driving down to south of Los Angeles. There's a town called San Pedro, really cute town. And it's a major port with those big container ships that go across the Pacific. And I was driving down there every week because there was a very kind songwriting group of about eight of us that would get together. And every week we would write a new song and come in and share these very vulnerable little things that we were just maybe bringing into the world. And I just was so nervous. It took me about 2 hours every day every week when I would drive down there because the traffic in LA was, you know, just horrendous at that time of day on Monday, but I was so dedicated to it. And I would get to San Pedro, to that port area, just a couple miles from the cafe where we would all meet. And I saw all these containers stacked up there from these container ships. And I thought, oh, that's where all the freight trains were going across Texas. They were going to San Pedro. That's where. And there was something about that that just brought back that lonesome feeling of crossing Texas, and it intertwined with this vulnerable feeling of where I was at the time. It wasn't the first song that I wrote for what became my 2020 album, A Thousand Tiny Torches. It wasn't the first song, but it was for a long time the one that I felt. It's an album of a lot of tender songs in different ways. They're not all ballads, but there was a lot of healing for every single one of the songs on that album. And there was a long time when this song felt the most personal of them all, because even though it doesn't maybe sound the most personal to the initial listener, to me, it felt like I was getting at something so deep in me that I had not previously. It's really about an existential crisis. I mean, that's it. In short, The Calling is about an existential crisis. Play the tune.
In the distance, I hear that whistle blow. I see it slipping like a serpent. Sunset glow. clouds are building up a storm, throwing bolts of lightning. They say it's gonna pour, and someone's calling someone. I can hear the neighbors ring. But no one's calling me. I turned up all the
Ariel Silver said, that song, The Calling, is about an existential crisis. I hope all of us have gone through at least one. Without going through an existential crisis, we just travel on the same line, the same highway that we're pointed on at the beginning, and we don't find what is truly us or the possibilities in our lives. So, as much as I feel sad for you about that crisis of your burnout, Ariel, as much as I feel that, I realize from the music that I've seen that we're sharing here today that it was fruitful. It just needed some time in the nest to come out to its full blossom, I think.
Mark, I hear what you're saying. I think that I am at a place where I can agree with you that, now I have a lot of deep gratitude for the troubles that I've had. I call them the troubles, just the real dark nights of the soul. And I think that, many, many people can relate those moments where you're really at the bottom. And I'm grateful for those moments now. At the time, a couple times in my life, I didn't think I was going to make it through them. And it's not that I'm saying I look forward to more, because I'm sure that, right, it's not that I'm trying to beckon them in, but I do know that great clarification of my values has come from those times, and great transformation. When you're up against that, you get clear on what's important. Eventually, maybe you're wallowing in all the questions and you don't know, but eventually what emerges, and it might take even a few years, but eventually something of immense value emerges from those times.
And so we've shared two songs, and after Soft on the Shoulder and The Calling, I know we have four more songs, and I want to make sure we have time to get them in as much as we can for the broadcast as well as the podcast version of this. I'm going to, against all of my native desires, suggest we go on to another song right away. What do you think about that?
Yeah, sure. I can give a brief one sentence introduction to a song if you like.
What? No, I wouldn't. I do not want one sentence. Again, what I'm hoping we do with Song of the Soul is going deep in spirituality, deep into the spirit, whatever that's called, whether you're a pantheist, as you might identify now, whatever. It's what's at the center that is important to me. And so, what song is going to get us there right now?
Well, the song that was jumping out in my mind just now was You Were Light, which is the first song on A Thousand Tiny Torches. So this album was released in 2020. All the songs on the album were written in, I think, 2018, 2019 time. And by then, my yoga practice was about 18 or so years old. And I had been teaching at that point for about 10 years. And I sat down to write a song. I didn't know what to write about. I was in this songwriting group where every week we brought in a new song, and it was Monday, and the Monday was the day that we met. And Monday, I was like, I don't have a song. It was around lunchtime, and I thought I better like really just sit down and write something, because I need to bring a song in tonight. And there's a bass player that I was working with. We both were working at the same music company at the time. And I went into the kitchen and I said, "Oh my gosh, I need to write a song for tonight, and I don't know what to write." And she said, "Oh, well, use," and I forget the what chords. She was just like, "Use these chords." And I was like, "Oh, okay, fine." So I went back into my office. I picked up my guitar, shut the door, and got to work, and was surprised at the speed at which this particular song emerged, at least the first draft of it, the first version of it. What I found myself thinking about as I was writing for that song was how I had been ending my yoga practice for all these years with the word namaste, the light in me sees the light in you. All my teachers had finished the practice every time I went with that word, and I finished the practice with my own students. I practiced 6 days of the week. I took the seventh day off to rest. And I found myself thinking about this word namaste and how the light in me sees the light in you. To really practice that, you have to apply that concept to everybody, including your exes. And it was in that
Right.
moment that I was like, oh my gosh, there is a person, at least one person, that I have not been thinking namaste to. I was thinking, wow, I don't see the light in that person. I was like, after all these years, maybe I can. And so this song was about me thinking about the light in my ex and how that was the light that initially brought us together. And even though over the course of the relationship, we might have piled on all kinds of other narratives and experiences and conversations and events that obscured the light, nevertheless, we both, as everybody else, have had a light in us. And so that's where the song came from, You Were Light.
Stood out in the cold. Of an old year, a sprinkling of snow, a noisemaker blow. Your face reflected golden red. You lit your cigarette, and for a second you were mine, and I could navigate your sky, steer through a thousand storied miles, sail through miracles and trials. We never saw spring, you never stopped drinking. Searched in the dark, stayed looking too long. I saw your spark and thought of stars that shine 10 billion years. 'Cause for a second
Silver is our guest today for Song of the Soul. That song, You Are Light, I just want to say, Ariel, it's beautiful to know it in that context of the relationship of that healing that some people never get to in those relationships. I have a close friend here who's very much got that division still between him and his ex from 30 years ago, and as I'm sure many people have heard, that forgiveness is not something you do for the other person. It's something you do for yourself. It's a burden you're laying down. And it sounds like having freed yourself of that burden, the world is a more light place. So, folks, please do check out Ariel Silver. ArielSilver.com is where you want to look for more of her music. And there's 5 albums with a 6th one underway, I understand. How far in the future is that going to be? Do we know? Is it 1 month or is it 12 months?
It's definitely not 1 month. But we have most of the tracking done for 3 of the songs on the album. And so we're making our way. And I might even start to release songs from the album before the entire album is finished. So as we finish songs, the best way for people to keep track of all that is to, thank you for sharing my website, for them to go to the website and join the mailing list, or, since we're a listening audience here, they can text the word love to 55444, and that will send them a love song from my third album, and also get them on the mailing list so that they can be in the loop as the new songs start to come out.
Again, that song, You Were Light. Light is a very powerful concept, certainly in Quakerism. So, I'll talk about looking at the inward light, inner light, sometimes used for that phrase. When I was first associated with Quakers, I imagined myself driving down the highway and every other car passing by in the other way, trying to see that as a light, beam of light from within there. And again, this is not necessarily seeing that it's all light. Most of us are a mixture of things, but that there is light there to be found and raised up. I'm quite aware that your Jewish upbringing would expose you to a wide range of beliefs, concepts. There isn't just one story. For every clear point in Jewish practice, there's at least 20 people around arguing from a different point of view in a wonderful, rich way. How has your spiritual transition gone from your Jewish upbringing?
I really appreciate that aspect of Judaism. I love that I'm not practicing, and I would say for the most part, and I don't belong to a synagogue here. It's probably got to be a wedding or a funeral that will get me to a service in that way at this moment in time. However, my childhood and my upbringing was deeply steeped in it, and there is a lot of good that I take from it, from that background. One of the things is that in the Jewish culture that I was raised in, it really encourages questions. It does not try to clamp them down. And so it gave me the space, even as a young child, to ask existential questions, to ask questions about what does God mean? What do I believe? What is this world? And why are we here? And who made it? How did this happen? And what is the point? And where are we? What are we supposed to do with these X number of years that we get here? And those questions were fine. They were fine as a child. I was not told not to ask them. And I wasn't told that my answers that I came up with at different ages, I was never told that they were wrong. I love that. And I also love that there was a ritual. There was something, everything about life was ritualized. There was a way to do everything. And really a prayer that was said every time you ate, and an awareness, a mindfulness about eating. My family was kosher, and so I grew up always reading the labels of any boxes and being aware of what I was consuming for my body in addition to my mind. And that led me when I was 14 to look at the hamburger that I was eating and recognize the animal that had turned into what we were calling food, but that it had once been called an animal, and that animal had been possibly a more or less free being on the planet. And so from that point forward, I was vegetarian. I just put the hamburger down and I just announced to my family that I wasn't eating it and I wasn't eating that anymore. And that proclamation had different iterations over the course of my life. There was an ebb and flow into veganism, a short foray back into omnivorism, pescatarianism at times. There was, this lack of rigidity for me, like I could explore and ask myself these questions, but
But we've run out of time for today's Song of the Soul broadcast for Arielle Silver. So I'll ask you to hold that thought and join us again next week for part two with much more music and so many more stories from Arielle. See you again next week for Song of the Soul. The theme music for Song of the Soul is by Chris Williamson, and it is called Song of the Soul. Check out all things Song of the Soul on northernspiritradio.org, guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Send your Songs of the Soul to me, Mark Helpsmeet, via the info on our website, and join us weekly for Song of the Soul.